And we're holding on Chaf Gimel Amud Beis, about two-thirds of the way down the Amud by the two dots. We were talking about the daughters of Lot, and in connection with the idea of Aveir Lishma, where we said that Yoel did that by seducing Sisera, where it was Lishma, because she saved the whole Jewish people because she got him to sleep and then killed him. So we mentioned Gufa, getting back to what we said before, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, La'olam yasik adam b'torah v'mitzvah safil l'shaloi l'shman, a person should always occupy himself with Torah and mitzvahs, even if it's shaloi l'shman, shemitoch shaloi l'shman bo l'shman, and we said that through shaloi l'shman, he'll eventually come to do them l'shman. And a proof for that is, says Rav Yehuda, shebischar aboy m'shnayim korbanos shehikrib Balak ha'rosha, in the schos of the 42 korbanos that Balak the Rosha brought. Because you have three times he asked Bilam to take him, he took Bilam to different places where he thought he could curse the Jewish people. Each place Bilam told him build seven mizbechas over there and offer on each one a parva aisle. So therefore that's 14 korbanos in each of three places, so 42 altogether. So in the schos of the 42 korbanos that Balak brought, Zochav Yotzem Imenu Rus, he had the schos that Rus was his descendant. So we see that even though he was doing shaloi lishma, nevertheless, it still has the effect of eventually being lishma, that through it eventually comes somebody, namely David and his descendants, who do mitzvahs lishma. An interesting point is, Marsha points out elsewhere on the face of it, you know, we learned yesterday that Tosfos makes a distinction within shaloi lishma, whether the person is doing shaloi lishma as in I want to become greater and then more famous or whatever, versus shaloi lishma where a person is doing it to attack others. Isn't Balak bringing his korbanos over here in order to attack others? He wants Bilam to be able to curse the Jewish people. And the answer is essentially that he was doing it out of fear that in fact the Jewish people would conquer him. That's what he says at the beginning of Parshas Balak, that that's what he's nervous about. And therefore, in that sense, it can be considered like the first kind of lishma. Wasn't, in other words, like he was going out as the aggressor, as he figured that he was being, now you could say, you know, he was projecting, you know, he would have done that in his situation. Therefore, he attributed that to the Jewish people, not realizing that we have a mitzvah over there, as the Gemara is going to quote in a few lines, that we're not allowed to conquer their land. But you could say he didn't know that. Nevertheless, there is at least a certain, it's not the worst kind of shaloi lishma, in other words. Okay. Getting back to
are you actually saying that if you do a mitzvah that's not lishman and someone else will benefit even after several generations, it's considered as it is lishma?
No, what I'm saying is when Tosfos said earlier that shaloi lishman, as in when a person does a mitzvah in order to attack others, that's not only is that not considered a mitzvah at all, but elsewhere the Gemara says it would be better if he wasn't born. Marsha is saying that doesn't necessarily apply to our case, because even though Balak is doing it with aggressive intentions towards the Jewish people, he's doing it out of what he thought was self-defense. So that's different. So it would be the first kind of shaloi lishma, where, for example, a person is doing a mitzvah in order to become better known, in order to become famous or whatever, which we said to begin with. I mean, it's not the best kind of mitzvah, but it's an acceptable mitzvah. We certainly say that a person should do such a mitzvah, and eventually from that, he'll come lishma.
Okay, but the problem is whether or not it's lishma is not as relevant as asking whether or not lishma it means yotzi or not yotzi.
You're yotzi no matter what. The question would be that we talked about yesterday, for example, even the person who ate the Korban Pesach, l'shem achila gasa, again, as long as it's something that could be called eating, not where he's revolted by the sight of food, then it can be called a mitzvah. We're not talking about that. That we talked about earlier. Now, what we're saying is that a person should do a mitzvah lishma. If he does it shaloi lishma, it's still not so bad. Eventually, from it, he'll come lishma. As opposed to Tosfos makes the distinction on Amud Aleph that if the shaloi lishma is that he's actually using it to harm and attack other people, then that's not. You could say maybe technically he's yotzei to the mitzvah, but that's not the kind of mitzvah he should be doing at all. And it would be better if he hadn't been born rather than doing a mitzvah like that. That's what it is. All right, let's go on.
It seems to be an ambiguous statement because on the one hand, Tosfos says that he is Yotzi, but on the other hand, he says it should have been better.
First of all, Tosfos doesn't say he should be Yotzi. Tosfos doesn't say he is Yotzeh. I'm adding that. I mean, the fact is, a person does a mitzvah and intends thereby by doing that mitzvah, somehow he's going to harm somebody else. I mean, on the face of it, he was still Yotzeh the mitzvah. If he takes lulav and esrog on Sukkos and thereby he's doing that in order to be able to say to somebody else, look what I am and look what a nothing you are that you didn't do that. The pashtus, he was still Yotzeh the mitzvah. It's just a very wrong way of doing it. And we're saying that it would be better if he hadn't been born rather than do mitzvahs like that. But all right, anyway, let's go on. We can talk about that later if you want. The Gemara continues. Getting back to Lot's daughters. How do we know that Hashem doesn't cut off, meaning withhold, even the reward for nice talk? In other words, even a person is, you may have two people who are doing the same thing, but one of them speaks about it in a more refined way, Hashem rewards them for that also. How do we know? We see by how Hashem later on talked about Moav and Ammon to the Jewish people. The Ila Bechira, the Karise Moav, now the elder daughter of Lot called her son Moav, which means May of, which means that she's openly saying, this came from my father. Which is a chutzpahdik thing to say, that everybody should now know what kind of znus was done over here. So generations later, Hashem tells Moshe, "Al totzaras Moav, al tisgor bom milchama. Don't harass Moav and don't provoke war against them." Now, what's the word milchama adding over there? Al tisgor bom, don't provoke them, would be enough. It means milchama hu deloy. You're not allowed to go to actual war against them. Avot tsa'urinam. But these Hashem is saying to them, you are allowed to trouble them. Rashi on the Pasuk mentions, for example, you can appear in front of them wearing all your weapons and gear and frighten them as though you're going to attack. Elsewhere, the Gemara says you can force them into Angaria, which is government service, government labor. But all you can't do is actually start a war against them. But anything short of that, you could. The Ilu Tseira, but then when it comes to the younger daughter of Lot, the Karise Ben Ami, she calls her son Ben Ami, which just means a son of my people. So she doesn't specify that it was from her father. So that's a more tzniistic way of talking. So Hashem tells Moshe, Al Titsurim, Al Tisgor Bam, don't trouble them and don't harass and don't provoke them, meaning Afilut Sa'uri, Lot Tzarin and Klal, don't even harass them at all. Don't appear in front of them in weapons, don't force them into Angaria, that sort of thing. So Ammon comes out better because their ancestress spoke more properly. There is, by the way, I think I've mentioned before, a story that Moshe Feinstein told, which is printed in the introduction to the last volume of Igros Moshe, that there was a balabas in his city of Luban in Russia, who one time became very sick, his tongue swelled up, he could hardly breathe. He calls for Moshe, he tells him last Shabbos was Parshas Vayera, I was talking about the daughters of Lot and I was putting them down, what a chutzpahdik thing they did, how could the elder one call him by such a name, Moav, like the Gemara is saying over here, even her descendants were punished for it. Anyway, that night he says two old women came to me in a dream, they told me we're the daughters of Lot, and they said, we'll tell you why we did that, because after all, we turn up pregnant, we have children. Everybody knows we weren't married. We could have claimed that the father is anybody we want. Nobody would suspect that we, the nieces of Avraham, the great nieces of Avraham, are going to do such a disgusting thing as to have relations with our own father. We could have, if we wanted, we could have claimed that they were fathered by Hashem. We could have started a whole new religion with them, like the Christians did later with their God. We Davka named the in particular, the older one says, we Davka named him Moav and Ben Ami, respectively, because we wanted to demonstrate to the whole world, no, there's no such thing. A child is always fathered by a human father, even if you have to openly admit that it was your own father, never by Hashem. There's no such thing. So it's a limud zchus on them that they did that, but still, our Gemara is saying that she still apparently could have found a better way. Anyway. On the other hand, continues the Gemara, Amar Abhiba Oven, Amar Abhishom and Korcha, La'olam Yachdim Odom Lidvai Mitzvah. A person should always be eager to do the mitzvah as soon as possible. I skipped a line before when he said that the 42 korbanos of Balak HaRasha, he had this source that Rus, Va'amar Abhiyasi Ber Chanin, Rabbi Yasi Ber Chanin says, Rus Bas B'noi Shal Egla and Melech Mayav Haisa, Rus was the granddaughter, or Tosfos says maybe not literally the granddaughter, but a descendant of Egla and the king of Mayav, who the Gemara is assuming over here was in turn a descendant of Balak. So it comes out, therefore, that Rus was a descendant of Balak. Anyway, getting back to where we were, Amar Rav Chiya Ba'Avin, Amar Rav Yishuv Ben Karcha, La'olam yakdim adam ledvar mitzvah. A person should always be eager to do a mitzvah as soon as possible. And here we have with what these girls were doing. Again, they thought in their circumstances that it's a mitzvah since they need to repopulate the world. In the schus of one night, the elder one went ahead of the younger one, where and to have relations with Lloyd, zochs of a kodma, a bar duris, the Yisrael Lamachus, she had the schus to be four generations ahead in the Jewish people when it comes to kingship. Namely, so Rus becomes a Gioris, and she and Boaz have a son together, Ovid. Then Ovid has a son, Yishai, who has a son, David, who has a son, Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech marries among his wives as Nama HaAmonis, so Gioris from Ammon. And then her son is Rechavam, so that way the Ammonim enter into the Jewish royal family. So you see that Rus got their four generations ahead of Nama. And Rus is descended from the elder daughter, because she's from Moab, and Nama is from Ammon. That's what we said. That's as Marsha explains elsewhere in Baba Kama, that each one has a Mila and a Chisarin. On the one hand, the elder daughter had the Mila that she went first. On the other hand, she had the Chisarin that she spoke about it in an unsneistic way. So therefore, the fact that she went first is why her descendants joined the Jewish people and joined the Jewish royal family first. On the other hand, the fact that she spoke in a chutzpahdik way like that, in an unsneistic way like that, is why her descendants were more open to being harassed and whatever by the Jewish people rather than her younger sisters. Okay. Mishnah says, Ha'isha shenodra b'nazir. We learned this mission the other day in connection with the whole discussion about megas gayas and then miyaka ochar. So ha'isha shenodra b'nazir. A woman made a neder of nazirus. The frishas behemta, and she designated her animal as a korban. And then her husband was made for the neder. So it depends who the animal belonged to. Im shaloi hoisa habehema, if the animal all along was his, animals, plural, whatever, tetsa v'tira be'eder, then they can go and graze out together with the rest of the flock, because she had no right to be makdish it in the first place, so it would be the equivalent to being makdish somebody else's animal, and in that case, there's no kedusha chal on it. As we'll learn in the Gemara, it's one thing if she does in the end have to bring the karbanos, then the husband is meshubad to bring it on her behalf, or for her to be able to take her husband's animals and be able to bring them, therefore they would have kedusha. But here, where her husband was made for her, and therefore there's no nazirus, then it turns out that it wasn't necessary.
Doesn't mean that her own private, just means
so right. That's what it says. Right, in the first words of the mission, didn't mean her own animal, just means an animal for her korbanos. So yeah. So that's we brought that the other day in the Gemara. We were discussing the question of whether Miyaka Ocker or Mega's guy is. We really focused over there more on the second part of the Mishnah about what happens if the animals were her, if the animals were his, then yeah, there's not much. So our Gemara is going to explain that you can say the husband is makna animals to her for things she needs, because he has to be makna her animals for korbanos, but only when she needs them. Here it turns out that she doesn't need it. And really, whether we say Miyaka Ocker, whether we say Megas Gai, is either way, it really works. Because the fact is, there's no Korbanos necessary now. It would be one thing if she became Tomei, where there you need Korbanos for that. But here you really have that, here it's really the end of the, it's the end of the, it would have been the end of the Nazirus, but there is no end of the Nazirus, because in fact, it was Mofer. So therefore, that's it. So no korbanos at all.
Right. They could go run wild. They're free.
They're free to do whatever. The im shalah hoisa behema. If the animal belonged to her, then we have to consider. Now there are three different. And we'll see in the Gemara on the days how that's possible, how you work that out. But anyway, then you have three different animals that you have to consider. Three korbanos that a nazir brings at the end of their nazirus are a chatas, an oila, and a shlomim. earlier, by the way, we were focusing more on the case we brought from Brises. If she becomes Tomei and she has to bring three carbonas, what's the deal with those carbonas? In particular, we mentioned the idea that she may have to bring that the chatas would be broad anyway, because it's only a bird. You can bring a chatas for a suffix. Rabbi Lazar Akapo says she needs kapara anyway. But here we're talking about she's a nazir tahor. She went through her. She didn't yet. I mean, the husband was made for her, so in the end there's no naziris, but she hadn't yet become Tomei. So then
she is if the husband is not being made for the naziris, then the assumption is that she can use his animal.
Yeah, that's the Gemara is going to talk about that point. Yeah, the Gemara is going to talk about that the husband is responsible for korbanos on behalf of his wife. Yeah,
but it's not like he has to be mekayim that.
No, or even if he's not mekayim, if he just waits until the end of the day, then the neder is automatically mekayim, right? Yeah. So hachatas tomus. So the chatas is going to have to be left to die, as we talked about the other day. You have the concept of chatois hamesis, and here, in effect, it's considered. We talked about the other day that it's considered like a chatas shemesu bala. It's considered the equivalent of a chatas whose owner died, because now, in effect, that's it. She's gone. There's no Naziros anymore. We talked about also the idea that since Rabbi Lazar Akapo says that a Nazir anyway needs a degree of Kapara, that degree of Kapara that they need is strong enough for this animal to still be considered a Chatas, and therefore, but it can't be offered because a Chatas Behema, you can't bring a Lasafik and you can't bring for weak reasons like that. Therefore, it ends up being a Chatas Amesa. We talked about the other day also, the Mefarish explained differently. He said that the whole concept of Chatois Hamesis applies only to animals, not to birds, which not all the Rishonim agree with that. So the Chatas has to be left to die. The Ola Tikrav Ola. The Ola is brought as a regular Ola, because an Ola you can bring voluntarily. Tosfos asks, we learned the other day that the Ola is we discussed the question between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shmuel, Brosh, Rabbi Yechon, and Broika, whether the Ola is considered part of her kapara or whether it's something more completely voluntary. So if you say that it's part of her, if you say that's part of her kapara, and therefore Rabbi Shmuel had said that no korbanos really are necessary if her husband was mefer, then why are we bringing the Ola? And the answer is because it's one thing that by a Nazir Tomei who needs kapara, and he holds that the Ola there is also part of the kapara, and therefore you can talk about actually just the opposite. He says you do need to bring the Ola as well, because once she's bringing her kapara for having become Tomei, then you need to bring the Ola as well. But the Chachamim hold that the Ola is in that case is not really part of the kapara. It's part of the process, but it's not really part of the kapara. But here you're not talking about Nazir Tomei. Here you're talking about Nazir Tomer, so it's different. So the Ola is still brought. And Shlomim Tikrav Shlomim, the animal that was supposed to be for the Shlomim, is brought as a Shlomim, but unlike a regular Shlomim, which is eaten for 2 days and the one night in between, here are the Shlomim of a Nazir. We mentioned it in Morning Davening, that Toid of El Nazir, Kodshim Kalim, Shkatasim B'chol Makam Azara, and we say they can only be eaten for 1 day and one night. Gzeres HaKostav, that the Shlomim of a Nazir and also a Toid, which is also a type of Shlomim, have to be eaten for only the 1 day and the one night, and then they become Nosir. So here we still treat it like that. It still is eaten for only one day, like the shlomim of as if it was the shlomim of another. The ain and tunin lechem. However, you don't have to bring the bread with them. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta that when a nazir brings his korbanos tara along with the shlomim, he brings 20 loaves of bread. But here since there's no naziros in the end, then the korban is still brought, but there's no bread accompanying it. Tosfos discusses the question also. First of all, even if we say Baal Miyaka Oker, even if we say the husband uprooted the neder as though it still never existed, but still, since they were Makudish for Shalmei Nazir, then therefore they retain that status. And they still have to be brought as a Shlomim and eaten as though they were Shalmei Nazir.
Because she separated before
he was made for right. Now another thing we're going to learn later in the Masechta, another unique thing that's done with the Shlomim of a Nazir is that you cook it. One of the chambers in the Ezra's Nashim was meant for the Nazir to shave his hair and to cook his korban, and then you take the cooked leg of the animal and you wave it together with some of the bread and whatever and the chos of a shoyt, and then you give that to the kohen. So now, do you have to do that with this one? Do you do the zroya? So So Tosfos discusses a couple of possibilities. Does it mean that the later on the Gemara is going to say that ein lahen zroya, that the din of zroya doesn't apply? So does that mean that you still have to give the zroya to the kohen, but you just don't waive it? Or maybe what it means is you don't cook it together and then give it to the kohen. Rather, you give it to the kohen raw. But maybe either way, you do have to give him the zroya somehow or other.
If you're doing the korban anyhow,
yeah. But I mean, you have to give him the chazav. Because the point is that now it becomes sort of halfway between a regular shlamim and a shlamim of a nazir. If it was a shlamim of a nazir, it would have two special things. It would have three special things with it. The time, the deadline for eating it, the bread, and the zroya. Now we're saying there's no bread. On the other hand, the deadline is shorter, like shalmei nazir. So now the question is, what about the zroya?
Is it a problem to cook a zroya?
Well, the problem is actually it's interesting. You know, elsewhere the Gemara talks about the concept. Where do we know the concept of bitul b'shishim? Well, okay, it's midrabanan. But where did the chachamim get the idea of davka shishim? And the explanation is when you cook this ram of the nazir, his korban shlamim, then and you're cooking the leg together with it. Now the leg is going to be given to the kohen. So it's also to zorim. And yet you're cooking them together, and one is absorbing flavor from the other. The Chachamim estimated that the zroya amounts to 1/60th of the bulk of the animal. And we see that you can cook them together, and it doesn't. Then the flavor that comes from the zroya is not assuring the rest of the meat. So the Chachamim used that as a basis for the concept of bitul b'shishim. So the implication is that otherwise, if you don't have the special din of zroya, maybe you shouldn't be cooking them together because you only recall you even though you cook them together, we're not worried about the flavor because it's bottle. But other things being equal, it sounds like if you don't have a reason to be cooking it together with it, then you shouldn't. You should take it off raw and give it to the kohen, like you're supposed to. It's kind of only b'di'evet, yeah.
That would be the taste going into the
rest of the meat, into the rest of the meat of the animal. The rest of the meat would be absorbing some taste from this zroya.
You don't cook. You cook it separately.
No, that's the point. Yeah, the point is with a regular ale nazir, what you do is you cook it whole. You cook it whole, the whole behemoth, right. And then you take the zroya b'sheli. You take the cooked zroya and you give it to the kohen.
And
in this case, we're saying that's what Tosfos is discussing. Maybe not, because after all, this is not a real shalmei nazir. So does it mean that you do cook it and then you give it to the kohen, you just don't waive it? Or does it mean that maybe you don't cook it together with the ram, maybe it becomes also all by itself and you just have to give it to the kohen and you can't cook it together with the rest of the animal?
The taste that we're talking about is going into the chalas?
Not chalas, it's going into the rest of the meat. The rest of the meat, you have your
cook. So what's the problem with it's only a kohen eating anyway?
That's the point. The rest of the meat, the Yisrael eats. The rest of the meat of the korban, the Yisrael eats. It's only the zroya, it's a shlamim. It's only the zroya that the kohen needs.
Yeah, the
Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Now, what happens if instead of animals, what if she had money and it was unspecified? So she had put together money and said, this is going to be for my korbanos, but she didn't specify yet these coins are going to go for the chatas, these for the oila, etc. So then, yiplul the nedava. We take all that money. Now, again, her husband was mefer for the. So now her husband was. By the way, as far as the ein and tornim lechem, Tosfos points out also that even if she had already designated the bread, you would have to still be poided. You'd still have to redeem it from hekdesh if you want to eat that bread. I miyaka okar. Maybe you could say the husband uprooted the neder. We still don't want people to think that hekdesh can become unhekdesh without being poided. And of course, if Megah's guy is, then anyway, you could be poydet. You don't say that it's too late to be poydet, because then that kedushas haguf until you shech the korban. Up until then, it only has kedushas damim, and some of the kedushas damim you can be poydet. So either way, you're in a situation where you could be poydet. It's not too late to be poydet, but on the other hand, you have to. You put that money in Nedava, which is one of the boxes or six boxes they had in the Bis Mikdash, where the money in it would go for Kayetz and Mizbeach, where they would bring Korbanos Oila when the Mizbeach is otherwise being unused. So the general rule, a lot of times when you have money of a korban, where the korban is not able to be brought, or there's a suffix or what have you, many times it goes to Nedava. continues the Mishnah, Mois Mefurashin. What if she had explicitly designated money? So she had a bundle that this is designated for the Chatas, this for the Oila, etc. Then, Dmei Chatas Yochol Yamamelach. The money for the Chatas is going to have to be thrown into the Yamamelach, which is the equivalent of if it was an animal leaving it to die. Because again, the point is you're not supposed to be having Hanah from it. You're not allowed to have hanah from it, but if you did, you haven't committed me'ila, because not also daraisa, because since it's going to be thrown into the Yam HaMelech, it can't really be called kodshim anymore. The same thing, by the way, Tosfos points out, the same thing is true as far as the chatas amesa. You have to leave it to die, but if you were to have hanah from it, again, it would be also true medirabanan, but you're not, so you couldn't be committing me'ila by it. Me'ila would only apply to something that's actually going to be brought as a korban, and here, this animal or this money is not. Dmei Ola Yaviu Ola, the money of the Ola will still be brought as an Ola, just like we said before, if there was an actual animal that would have been brought as an Ola. Umoylan Behan, and if a person uses that money for other purposes, they've committed Me'ila, just like with any money of Hekdesh. Yeah, because it's going to be used for that. Dmei Shlomim, Yaviu Shlomim, the money of the Shlomim is used to buy a Shlomim. There, by the way, Me'ila doesn't apply. Me'ila applies to Shlomim only when it comes to the Emurim, only when it comes to the facts of them that are brought on the Mizbeach. The rest of it, since it's eventually going to be eaten by the owners and the Kohenim, then Me'ila doesn't apply to it while it's alive, or right after it's shechted. So, and again, those shlomim that you buy with these money would be like the hybrid shlomim that we talked about before, where on the one hand, they have the deadline of the Shalmei Nazir, but on the other hand, you don't bring bread with them, and you have Tosfos discussion of what you do as far as the Zeraya with them.
So okay. Money gets wasted, but the other part, the Chatas gets wasted.
So the Chatas money gets wasted, but the other ones do end up being brought as carbon. Yeah, no. Wow. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Mantana de Baal Loi Mishtapa. In the beginning of the, which Tana is it that, which Tana is it that holds that the husband is not Meshubad to his wife for Korbanos, meaning he's not obligated to buy Korbanos on her behalf? And therefore, so we're saying in the Mishnah that there's a difference that if the animals belong to him, then we say that they all now become chulin, and there's no chatas amesa, and there's no bringing the ola, and so forth. So which Tana would be saying that, and that therefore you would make that distinction? If he was meshubad to her, there'd be no difference whether it's her animal or his animal. Omer of chister rabbanon. That has to be according to the rabbanon who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. Because the Isak Radach Rabbi Yehuda, if you were to hold that the Mishnah is like Rabbi Yehuda, as the Brisa is going to bring as the Gemara is going to bring a Brisa in a moment, I might take a tirav eder. You would have to ask why in the first case of the Mishnah, how could the animal go out and graze in the rest of the flock? After all, to begin with, the husband was meshubad to his wife, that he's obligated to provide korbanos on her behalf for whenever she needs them, and therefore the fact is there was a period of time when she was obligated in these korbanos. The same way as we said, if they're her animals, even though now the neder is mufer, there's still enough residual kedusha on them to require that she brings that she does something with them, and therefore the chatas becomes mesa and so forth. If the husband is meshubad to bring korbanos for her, to provide korbanos for her, then the same din should apply.
It wouldn't be different
whether it belongs to her or to his. No, that's
so
the point.
So
if you say so, that the Gemara had mentioned that the other day. We said that if we said miyaka okar, then we can understand that we can understand. we said the other way around. We asked if miyaka okar, then even if the animals belong to her, why shouldn't they just go out to Fulham? Shouldn't it be Mega's guy? So we answered over there because we said that after all, we had two different girsois over there. She doesn't need kapara, or she does need a degree of kapara, and therefore it becomes a chatas amesa. In the end, the Gemara did end up saying megas gaiz, so therefore it's very straightforward to understand. When she designated these korbanos, she actually did require them. Later on, it turns out that she didn't. But even if we said miyaka okar, the Gemara found a way to make it work. Yeah. Okay. D'tanya, so we learn in a braiser of Yehuda, Odom maybe korban osher al ishtar. A husband brings a korban for a rich person on his wife's on his wife's behalf. So let's say, for example, Tosfos gives the example that his wife is chayav a korban ol of a yod. You have certain averus where when a person suffolk does them, not so much suffolk, but for example, you have a person swore a shvua, and then it was a false shvua, or they violated their shvua. You have You have Shavua, you have if they were Tomei and went into the Beis Hamikdash and didn't realize it, there's a couple of cases. Anyway, the din is a person has to bring a special kind of chatas, which is Ola V'yoda. The value goes up and down. If they're rich, they bring a sheep for a korban. If they're poor, they bring two birds, one for an Ola, one for a chatas. And if they're the poorest of all, Dali Dalos, then they bring a korban mincha, which is only flour, no oil, and no lavona. So now, what happens if the wife herself has no assets, but the husband is rich? So Rabbi Yehuda says he's going to be required to supply a rich person's korban on her behalf. Same thing the pastoress would apply if she when she gives birth. When a woman gives birth, again, if she's rich, then she brings a sheep for a sheep and a bird as a chatas and an oila. And if she's poor, then she brings two birds. Same thing. So Rabbi Yehuda says he's going to have to bring the rich ones. And the same thing Rabbi Yehuda says, any other korban that she has to bring, he has to bring on her behalf, or he has to supply on her behalf. Because this is what he writes for her in the Ksuba. Any responsibility that you have, Olai is on me, mean kadmas dina, even from beforehand. So even if she was chayiv and a korban from beforehand, so not children, but let's say for example, a korban olav yodet. Let's say she had done the avera where that makes her required to bring a korban olav yodet before she was married. Now they're married. So now Rabbi Yehuda says, well, the husband can't say, well, when you did the avera, we weren't married, so tough luck, you bring your own korban. No, he's required to supply the korban. Tosfos points out, So Tosfos points out two things, sorry. First of all, Tosfos says this would only be korbanos that she's chayev, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. And second of all, actually, Tosfos says no. When we say min kadmas dina, Tosfos actually says that it still doesn't mean that it applies to korbanos that she became chayev in before the nisuin. Let's say it could mean after the kiddushin or whatever. It doesn't before they got married. Well, he says kodim shenises, so anything from before they got married, he's not obligated in. So in that case, min kadmas dina would just mean that anything that you were chayev in beforehand, before you tell me about it or something, then I obligate myself to bring. So the point is, in other words, that Rabbi Yehuda is saying the husband is obligated to supply the korbanos. Well, if according to Rabbi Yehuda, there would be no distinction in our Mishnah between whether the animals belong to the husband or the wife. Either way, they're meshubad to the wife's korbanos. The fact that we have that distinction can only be according to the Chachamim. On the other hand, Rava Omar Afilu Tamer Rabbi Yehuda. You could even say our Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Yehuda. So Tosfos brings actually that, first of all, the different girsa, not that he writes to her in the ksuba, and then you could say, min kadmas dina, means that he's accepting on himself responsibilities from earlier, but rather the other way around, that she, when she receives her ksuba, eventually, she writes him out a receipt saying that I received my ksuba payment, and all achrayus that I had that was incumbent on you, min kadmas dina, from beforehand, I am moichel. So in other words, we see that because he's meshubad, she needs to explicitly mention it at the time of gerushin. So that's why Tosfos is learning. Not that he's saying that he's obligated in korbanos that she was chayiv in from before they got married or before they got or before anything. Even from what was before they got married, apparently Tosfos is saying that even if during the time of the erusin she became obligated in some korban, let's say she did a shvuas bitri or went into the Beis Hamikdash Tomei or whatever, still even according to Yehuda, the husband wouldn't be responsible for that. But after they get married, then we're saying the husband is responsible for any korbanos of his wife's. And later on, we see that when she's paid her ksuba, she actually has to write him out something that says that I'm moichel on any future and on you having to pay off any future ones. So in other words, if she was chayev faker, when she was chayev in a korban while they were married and she didn't have a chance to bring it beforehand, and now they got divorced and she's writing out a shover to him to say that I received it, then she's saying, fine, I'm not holding you responsible for bringing my korbanos for bringing this korban that I incurred while we were still married. But up until then, he is, yeah.
Even though the chiyuv started
when she was married, right? On the other hand, the Rosh talks about the Rosh talks about similarly to Tosfos brings from Gemara and Baba Basra that if she incurred the chiyuv of the korban, before they got married, then yeah, the husband is not responsible for it. Anyway, the point is, so again, according to Rav Chisda, Rabbi Yehuda cannot possibly be the Tana of our Mishnah, because according to him, there's no reason to distinguish between whether the animals belong to him or to her. Rava Amar Afilo Tamer Rabbi Yehuda. Rava says, no, you could even say our Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Yehuda. Ki Meshabed Law, because you could say, when is the husband Meshubed to his wife? B'milsa D'tzricha Law, only with something that she needs. The milsa the loyt sricha la loy, when it comes to something she doesn't need, then no, he doesn't have a shibud. So in this case, he was made for the neder. So therefore, we can't say so. There's no neder anymore. Whether we say megas gaias, whether we say mieka ochar, the fact is there's no nazirus anymore for her to have to bring the korbanos. Therefore, we can say he's not meshubud to her to still supply animals that are now going to have to be a chatas amesa and a voluntary oila and so forth. No. Because she doesn't actually require them.
So she has no funds.
So that's it. So then she would have to. So no, then we said nothing happens. Takes a tirah be'eder, the korbanos just go out and graze. In other words, then it's the equivalent of not having designated korbanos at all. What would happen if she had taken a neder of Naziros, not designated any animals or any money yet for the korbanos, and then the husband is mefer? Nothing happens. Same thing over here, because the animals didn't belong to her. Therefore, he's not meshubad that the kedusha that she put on them should have any effect.
Only if
the animals belong to her. That's what we said.
Right, but if she prepared animals, then
that's the thing. Rava is saying even Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that the husband is meshubad to his wife as far as her korbanos, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that when she doesn't need the korbanos, then nothing happens. And here, in the end, she doesn't need them because there's no nazirus after all.
Is the husband able to be made for just her choice of this animal?
Bepashtus not, because that wouldn't be inri nefesh, because there's no affliction during it. It probably wouldn't be dvarim shebeina levena, because it's not something that directly affects their marital relationship. So therefore, there may not be a basis for him to be made for that part of the neder anyway. Ikadamri, another version of the discussion goes like this. It starts off, Man Tana, who is the Tana of our Mishnah? Amar Rav Chista, Rav Yehuda. So now, in the second version, it's the other way around. Rav Chista starts with the assumption that our Mishnah would be according to Rav Yehuda. The Chi Meshabed Lo, but Milsa D'Tzricha Lo, because we could say, like Rav Svara, he's only Meshubed to her in something that she needs, the Milsa D'Tzricha Lo, but not something that she doesn't need. And Rav Chista says, Fakev, to I Rabbanan, if you were to think that our Mishnah goes according to the Chachamim, Loi Meshabed Lo Klal, and then he's not meshubad to her at all, and therefore there's nothing even to talk about as far as the animals being kaddish, whether he was mefer whether or not. Our Mishnah is saying if he was mefer, then the animals go out and graze, implying that if he wasn't mefer, then eventually those animals are brought as korbanos. Well, in the second version of Chista is saying, according to the Chachamim, why should it be? They're his animals, they're not her animals. So how does she have the right? If I went over to your flock of animals and I said I'm going to bring this sheep as my chatas, nothing happens. So why should it be any different whether the husband was made for her or not?
He has to support her.
He has to support her, but that's not the same thing as bringing her korbanos. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we learn from the wording of the Ksuba that he's chayiv in her korbanos. The Chachamim disagree. According to the Chachamim, we go according to her status. If she has money, then she brings the korban of a rich person. If not, then she brings the korban of a poor person. So in the second version, Rav Chista is saying that the Mishnah can only be like Rabbi Yehuda. But Rav Chista continues, Ela Hechi Dami de Meshabed Law. How would we be able to understand the Mishnah that after all, conceivably these animals are brought as korbanos if he's not mefer for her? The Mishnah is implying that the korbanos are brought. It could go into Akni Allah. For example, if the husband was makne the animals, if the husband was makne to her animals. Now, by the way, the Rosh points out, we don't mean that he actually was makne who the animals and said, you can use these for your korbanos of Nazirus. Because then obviously he's makayim the neder anyhow. Obviously with that, he's implying that I approve of the neder, then he can't be made for anyway. We're talking about where he just gave her the animals as a gift without specifying why. So he gives her animals. Let's say he says later on, if you eventually need animals for korbanos for whatever purpose, you'll be able to use these.
First he broke off her.
We're talking about that first she made a neder of nazirus. He gave her at some point, whether before that or after that, he gave her animals, and this way she has available animals for any future korbanos she may need. Now,
is that being the kind of doing it?
No, because then that's the thing, because he didn't mention the nazirus specifically. And it could even be that he gave her the animals beforehand, before she ever took the neder of Naziris. Whereas we learned in the Dorim, you can't claim a neder before it exists. But whatever, the point is, it doesn't matter. The point is, either way, he didn't actually say this is for your Naziris, so that doesn't amount to a kiyum. Now, if he's made for the neder, then we can talk about whether the animals are hers or his. So the kiven to akne, have it the nafsha. Once he's makne to her, it becomes hers. So then, after all, there still can't be the distinction of the Mishnah between whether the animals belong to him or her. Either way, then in effect they belong to her. Therefore, says Rav Chista, looking at it that from that point of view, the Mishnah can only follow Rav Yehuda. And again, Rava Omar, Rava says, Afilo Temer Rabbanan, not necessarily. You could even say that our Mishnah goes like the Chachamim, because again, you could say, Ki Maknila Nami B'milsa D'tzrichala. You could say that the husband is Makna the animals to her, not completely unconditionally, only if she actually needs it. B'milsa D'tzrichala L'Maknila. He's not Makna to her if she doesn't actually end up needing it. So since in the end, it turns out she doesn't need these Karbanas, then we can say that retroactively all along, the husband had not been Makna these animals to her, and therefore we could say that even the Chachamim would agree that would agree that there's a distinction between whether the animals belong to him, where then there's no kedusha on them at all, versus when they belong to her, where then we said the chatas is a chatas amesa and so forth. So you could make the Mishnah work like the Chachamim as well.
If it was available, she had general components available that if she would need for anything, and then she takes the zeros upon herself, then she would be mechuyev.
Then she would be mechuyev to bring them to pashtus, because then they're full-fledged hers. Yeah. What we're talking about is that he gave her, to begin with, animals, telling her, and in the future, any korbanos that you need can come from these animals. So now, it turns out, she doesn't need these korbanos because it was made for her. So that's not included. So therefore, to begin with, when he gave her these animals, they're not nikna to her for that purpose. So therefore, that's it. So then there's no kedusha on them. They're still considered to belong to the husband.
It depends according to the Rabban or Rav.
So that's the thing. The Rav Chista is saying that it doesn't hold of that distinction. So he holds the Mishnah can only be according to Rav Yehuda. Rava is pointing out that even the Chachamim would say that there can be a case where the husband is machneh to her and a case where the husband is not machneh to her. And therefore, that'll make a difference. Therefore, you can still have the distinction of our Mishnah between whether it belongs to him or whether it belongs to her. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, we said if the animal belonged to her, chatas tomus, so we said the chatas is going to have to be left to die, but ola tikrav, and the ola is going to be offered. But the question is, himanola, how does she come to have animals of her own anyway that are not her husband's? All this time we've been talking about the animals belong to the husband, and either according to the Yehuda, the husband is meshubad to supply them, and according to the Chachamim, we can say like he made a conditional deal with her about when he's giving them to her. But now we're talking about the animals outright belong to her. How does she have that in the first place? Ha'amit mashakona ishakona baila. Didn't you say, don't we learn that whatever a woman acquires, her husband acquires? That's the thing. We learned in the Nedarim, actually, that we can even have that a husband gives something to his wife, it's not necessarily unconditionally hers. We talked about that at the end of Nedarim. We had a short sugya about that. About when somebody else gives a wife a gift, or even when the husband himself gives her a gift, is it meant to be unconditional? Is it meant to be that it's hers no matter what? On the face of it, Masha Kansi Isha Kansa Baila. So the answer is Omar Papasha Kamatsata Miisasa. You could give an answer where she saved from her dough. So in other words, her husband gives her money for food. And the expectation is, as we learned in Kesubas, there's a certain amount of food that she's going to be eating per week. So now let's say that she saves from that. She doesn't eat that full amount. So therefore, over time, she saves up a little here and a little there. So now eventually she has money to buy an animal. And in that case, it actually taka belongs to her.
And again, if the husband just wants to give her spending money, that would come with strings attached.
So that's the thing we talked about in Nedarim, that yeah, you can have, for example, does he actually have to say to her that this is for you to buy food, or that this is for you to buy yourself jewelry or whatever, or can he just give it open-ended and it still works as well? We had a discussion about that in Nedarim.
Works as well,
that it should actually belong to her outright. Do we say, in other words, it only belongs to her only if she's using it for food, let's say, but not if she's using it for something else, or can we say that it just belongs to her outright?
So the Magen Omer that he has to specify, basically, if he said, then it wouldn't work if he just says, like, here, it is like for you, no strings attached.
So that's the thing. So Tosfos brings over here from a Gemara in Ksubas, Moisa Mizonis Labal, that the husband that the, you have, okay. The extra amount, if the husband gives her money for Mizonis and there's extra, then it reverts to him. So Tosfos first says that Tosfos first gives an answer that we're talking about over here. To begin with, he told her, "See, Masi Adayachim Mizinasayich. You support yourself. You do your own work, spinning wool or whatever, and earn money from that. And you support yourself. So now, if there's anything extra, if she gets more from that, then obviously she gets to keep it. That's one answer. Then Tosfos brings another answer. Is that what do we mean? Moisim Mizonis Labal is, for example, where prices went down. So now the same money buys her more food. So now we're saying that there's extra. But here we're talking about that she saved on her own. The prices are still the same, but she ate less than usual. That belongs to her. But yeah, returning to as far as if the husband gives her, right. So it's not so simple. As we learned in Nedarim, it may be that he actually has to tell her that it would be for whatever you're going to be eating. So there we talk about more if somebody else is giving it to her, but the point is though that so now if she saved on her own and ate less, then that'll belong to her. Another possibility would be that somebody else was makne to her, and he says that it's on condition that your husband has no reshus in it. So there also, so now we have that discussion in Nedarim. Is it enough to say that he gives it to her as a present as long as your husband doesn't have reshus, or does he actually have to add the words elamachat noisis when they send us befich, only for what you're going to be taking and putting into your mouth? Does he have to add those words? And then, and we talked about over there, the idea, the Ran brought over there, that maybe what it is then it becomes hers only when she puts it in her mouth. And at that point, we can't say that the husband gets any rights over it because it's in her mouth already. So therefore, maybe that's required or maybe not. Maybe it's enough to say, we had a machlokas Rav and Shmuel over there, and Tosfos says that the halacha is like Rab over there. We talked about over there. Does everybody agree to that? But anyway, the point is that here are two examples. So here we're not getting into that level of detail, but the point is here are two examples of how it's conceivable for her to have animals of her own that the husband has no reshus in. Obviously, I mean, there are other ones as well. I mean, you have, yeah, the husband can give her an outright matana, but the Gemara is trying to find a more usual way of how it could happen.
So her father says, here, this is for you. I'm going to ask your husband, shouldn't that be... have anything to do with it.
So that's the thing. We learned in Nedarim, it depends. We had a machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Is that enough? Or does he actually have to say, Mashat noises when they send us the fifth? But he actually has to say, this is for you, for what you're going to be putting in your mouth.
Yeah, but she gave me to it for her carbon, it's not going to her mouth.
Well, that's the point, in other words. So is that effective? So yeah.
Okay.
Next, we said ha'ola tikrav ola v'ashlom tikrav chola. We said the ola is brought as a regular ola, the shlomim is brought as a shlomim, but it's sort of a hybrid between a shalmei nazir and a regular shlomim. We said the deadline is like a shalmei nazir, but there's no bread.
So here with the shlomim part, yes, she's going to have food.
Right. Anyway, fine. So now the Gemara, now throughout the rest of this parak, we're going to have a few other examples like that, where we have a shlomim of a nazir, which is not brought as the full shlomim of a nazir. It's missing these things. It's missing the bread. So Amale Shmuel la'avur bar'ihi. So Shmuel says to Avur bar'ihi, loy tesev akarach, do not sit down on your feet, meaning in other words, stay standing, and tell me, abda amitli hoda milsa, until you tell me this thing, until you tell me what are all the cases where you bring a ram as a shalmei nazir, but you don't bring it, but it doesn't have the full dinim of a shalmei nazir, you don't bring it with the bread. And as Tosfos said on Amud Aleph, maybe you don't do the special things with the zeraya. So what are all those cases? Please explain it to me. So Avur answers, Tosfos actually says two possibilities. One is that it's Avur answering with what Shmuel is asking him. So Shmuel asked him and he's answering, or that Shmuel is quoting that and he's saying that now based on the list that I'm going to tell you, there's a question and I want you to answer that question. So the list is like this. There are four cases where the ram does not require bread. Shaloi, v'shalah. One is where it's his, one is where it's hers. The Gemara is going to go and explain in detail what we mean by his and hers. V'shalah achra misa. Another one where it's after death, where the nazir designated the animal and then died before he brought the korbanos. V'shalah achra kapara. And another one where it's after kapara, where he designated an animal for the shlamim. It got lost. He designated a different one and brought it as the shlamim, and now the original one turned up. So all those four cases are the cases where you bring the ram, you still bring the ram as a shlamim, but there's no bread together with it. So now, let's figure it out. Shalah hada amaran. The case of shalah, we just said, this is the case where the wife made a neder of nazirus and her husband was made for it. Shalah, what do we mean his? So detnan, we learn later on in our perek, ha'ish madiras b'nei b'nazir, a man, has a father, has the ability, we're going to learn over there, it's halacha l'moshe m'sinai, to declare his son a nazir. Ve'eino ish madiras es b'na b'nazir, a woman does not have, a mother does not have that ability to be madir her son in nazirus. If he wants to take nazirus on himself, good, but she doesn't have the right to say, you are a nazir, and that it should stick.
Under
bar mitzvah. Under bar mitzvah, right. That we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta. So what happened with Shimshon and what happened with Shmuel, where how did they become Nazirim? So does it mean that in fact their fathers eventually imposed the Nazirus on them? Does it mean that maybe there's a Sicha we talked about, from the Rebbe, that maybe what it is more they educated them in such a way that they themselves should understand when they become older, they have to continue with the Nazirus that they were keeping until now. Al-Derech, like you have with a child who was Nisgayer, where you hopefully give them a chinuch that even when they're Bar Bas Mitzvah, and they have the choice to stay a yid or to revert to being a goy, hopefully they'll make the right choice. So then it was a similar kind of thing.
The right choice, but halachically, there's nothing
binding. Halachically, they can do either one they want, but it's still better to be part of the Jewish people, isn't it?
No, talking about to be a nazir.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. The Rebbe compares it to, in other words, with Shimshon, the Malach was telling them, and with Chana, she was saying, we'll give them such a chinuch that for them, it'll become like a part of them. I am a nazir, and I can't possibly be anything else. The same way, you're a doctor, a goyish baby, and you hopefully raise him in such a way that he thinks to himself, at Bar Bas Mitzvah, I can't possibly be anything other than a yid. This is my identity. Anyway, a father has the ability to be madir his son, not a mother. But the Mishnah continues, gilach. What happens if the son himself takes a haircut?
If this is just a question of socializing the child into being a nazir, then there is no difference between the mother and the father.
No, but the difference is that with the father, he actually declared him a nazir. That nazirus is chal, unless, as we're going to say, the son protests against it. As long as it's going to be, whether it's 30 days, whether it's his whole life, whatever, as opposed to if the mother imposes nazirus on him, he's still not technically a nazir. If he wants
technically a nazir,
he can
bring the carbon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Mishnah continues, gilach, if the son shaved his hair, showing that he doesn't want to be a nazir, or his relatives did that, showing that they were protesting against what the father did. Or if he protested and said he doesn't want to be a nazir, or the relatives protested on his behalf. In all those cases, there's no nazirus. It's the equivalent kind of being made for the nazirus. Therefore, so the same thing. So then it's similar to our Mishnah. If there's unspecified money, then we put it in the nedava boxes. And if we have explicitly designated money, same thing. The money for the chatas is thrown into the Yamamalach because we can't have hana from it. In fact, Julian Ashas adds the words, you're not allowed to have hana, but no, there's no mila with it. The money of the ola is still used to buy an ola, and the ila would apply. The money for the shlomim is used to bring a shlomim. And they're eaten for one day, and they're not brought with bread. So that's the case of shaloi. That's the case of his korbanos, where we're saying that you wind up bringing a shlomim, but without the bread.
The katan, is a real thing.
It apparently is enough of a macha. Yeah, yeah. And we'll talk about it more in a few days. Bas Hashem, and Daf Chavches when we have that Mishnah. Next, shalacha misa menolon. What's the case after the nazir died? So Ditanya, we learn in a braisa, hamafush mois the nazirus. Say a person designated money that's going to be brought for his nazirus. So meila, so you're not allowed to have hana from it, but meila doesn't apply to it. Tosfos points out the loinenin might be derabbanan, it might even be doraisa in this case, because after all, even a full-fledged shlomim, even if you have an actual animal for shlomim, like we said before, me'ilah doesn't apply to it. But the reason why me'ilah doesn't apply to this money, because that entire bundle of money, conceivably, you could use for the shlomim. Like this, practically speaking, the nazir is probably going to use some of it for the ochatas, some of it for the oila, etc. But it's stumin, he didn't specify. So he has the ability to take all that money and buy the best animal for a shlomim possible, and then he'll get more money and use that for the other two korbanos. Well, then again, me'ilah doesn't apply to a shlomim until it's shefted and the emurim are taken out, and then me'ilah applies to those. Mess, on the other hand, the braisa continues, if this nazir died, and there was this mois stumim left, you pull it in a dava, then we put it in a dava again because some of it was probably going to be used for a chattas. Mois mefuroshen, and if it was specified, mechattas yelich liyamamelech leinen v'lemoylen. Again, the money for the chattas goes to the yamamelech. You can't have enough. Me'ilah doesn't apply. May oli yaviu olo moylen behen. The money of the olo is used to buy an ola, and me'ilah applies to it. May shlomim yaviu shlomim v'nachol niyamecha bein tun and lechem. So again, you have, there is the third case where you're bringing an animal that was supposed to be for a nazir, and here in the end you are bringing it as a shlomim of a nazir, but not fully, because you're not bringing it with the bread. The fourth case, Shla'acha Kapara, Svarahu. So now, the case of La'acha Kapara, where he designated an animal, and then he lost it, and then he brought a different animal for a korban, and now he found this one, so that we don't have a braisa or a mishnah for it, Svarahu. So it's a svara. So again, it's either ihi bar oven, it's either avuha bar ihi quoting this to Shmuel and saying that this is the fourth one and we get it from a svara, or it's Shmuel saying to avuha bar ihi, this is the fourth one, but I have a question on it. Why is it that after the nazir died, we don't say that we say that the shlomim is still brought as a shlomim, but without the bread? Why is that? Because after all, it's not suitable for kapora, but the Gemara elsewhere expresses it with the idea in kapora lemesim, that a mess doesn't need that kind of kapora of a curb. So then, shalacha kapora nami hole chazir kapora. So then, after kapora also, now he doesn't need kapora anymore because he already brought the shlomim. So therefore, therefore it should have the same thing.
The money.
So therefore, not the money. Here we're talking about the animal for the shlomim. So therefore, the result is it still is brought as a shlomim. It had kedusha of a shlomim that can't be taken away from it. But it's brought as a shlomim of a nazir, but without the bread. Because the bread is only when there's nazirus over here, and the nazir is going to wave the bread together with the zroya and whatever and give them to the kohen. So the Gemara asks, the true leka, is there no more than that? Are there no more cases than that? Vo'iko, you have another case. All the other shlomim of a nazir, which was shechted shloikim mitzvah, so not according to the mitzvah, meaning shloi l'shma. So the earlier part of the braisa talks about where the nazir brought a korban which turned out to be posel and then shaved his hair, and that turns out the korban was posel. So now you have dinim, which we're going to talk about later on in our masechta, as far as he has to regrow his hair. So now the braisa continues that ushar kol shami nazir shoftim shleikum mitzvasan, all the rest of the shlomim of the nazir, if he shefted them shloi lishma, shaved them, then they're kosher. As usual, most korbanos he shecht shloi lishma, the korban is kosher. It just doesn't count for the chayva of the owner, so he's not yotze, so he has to bring a different animal. Unlike a chattas and a korban pesach are brought shelo lishma, then they're completely possible. You stop the avoda of them right there and take them out to burn them. Most other korbanos, if you do one of the avodas shelo lishma, then the korban is still kosher. You're just not yotze with it. The Gemara talks about it extensively at the beginning of Zvachim. And the braisa continues. And in such a case, you still have to bring a new shlomim, but you don't bring the bread with it, you don't bring the zoya, and you don't bring the zoya with it. So even though, in other words, this animal, this shlomim, so it was shecht, let's say the person shechted it, shaloi lishma, so you still continue the avoda of it, but at that point, you don't continue with the bread and the zoya and the rest of that. You still bring it as a shlomim, and it still has the deadline of a shlomim. So we see that there is another example, a fifth example, where you're bringing it without bread. The answer is kimitzvasan kachoshiv The answer is the answer is that Shmuel or Avu Habayi is only listing the ones which are brought according to their proper mitzvah. So shaloi kimitzvasim, like a choshev. He's not talking about a case where it was brought shaloi kimitzvasim, where the person did something wrong during one of the avodas. It's true in that case also. You don't bring it with the bread, but we're not listing that. We're focusing on cases where everything is being done the right way, and just there was a side thing that came in. The husband was mefer for his wife, or the son's nezirus was mufer by himself or by his relatives, or where the person died, or where the person was niskaper. So within those, which are a normal standard operating procedure, then you have these four cases. Everyone.